interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National earthquake.
First time, we are bringing you the full story of what happened. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Here's a strange one from Minnesota. Well, they say, sure enough, this is the country of opportunity. Because in Cormorant, a small town in Minnesota, a 7-year-old dog named Duke was just elected mayor. That's right, the Great Pyrenees apparently won by a landslide, beating out another human contender for the mayorship. His opponent there is a fellow who owns the Cormorant store, says he didn't even have half as many votes as Duke did. And Duke is going to actually hold his position for 1 year after he is officially sworn in. And amazingly, they say Duke is not the first non-human to be elected to public office. Stubbs the Cat, for example, has been the mayor of Talkatina, Alaska, for the past 17 years, and following a successful write-in campaign, the feline was sworn in as mayor of the small village shortly after his birth. They say he even survived an assassination attempt by a local dog in 2013. Well, you know, the way things have turned out, I can hear more than a few of you murmuring out there in the audience, why not? Maybe things would be better than they are if we had a dog or a cat in office instead. Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer is Sam, the Animal Steele. Good evening, Sam.
Hey, buddy. How goes it in South, wherever you are, Sville?
Well, you know, Sam, I am in Puerto Rico still at the Bermuda Triangle base, which is going to play an integral role in the exciting report I have to share with all the listeners soon. But next month, I will be returning to Asheville for the fall. I mean, that's the busy, crazy time. Obviously, that's where the Asheville Mystery Museum is, so I'm really making the most of my time here in the tropics for the time being.
Do you think I could book you for, would you give me a personal tour of the museum?
Absolutely.
I've never been. Never been.
Well, if you're going to go, you should go with me because, unfortunately, I've been kind of lazy over the years, and I've just put all kinds of weird stuff in there that I haven't taken the time to label yet.
I'll help you label.
There are things that my staff and friends, they walk through, and they have no idea what this stuff is. They're like, this is really weird, but if Josh dies before he labels this stuff, we may never know what it actually is. So I'm the only person who can actually give you a thorough tour until I sit down and start putting some more labels and tags on things.
Nice.
And it's just an ever-growing, chaotic collection. But, hey, some of the things you'll find inside are things like, remnants from Dracula's castle there in Transylvania, a place that you also investigated, which is why we call you Investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop, the giggling cat owner in the background. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you doing?
You know, it's one of those shows where it just kind of feels, honestly, a little overwhelming. We're just getting started, but I just have so much stuff to report that is just mind-boggling. For one thing, we have now some great results in from the Arecibo Project, and
I believe
we made contact. And so I'm going to explain on this show tonight very thoroughly exactly how this happened, because I have been on Coast to Coast AM talking about this. I've been on Darkness Radio with Dave Schrader talking about it. I've been on Sean David Morton's show talking about it. I have been on other shows where the host is interviewing me. But when you are being interviewed, well, you only have kind of limited opportunity to tell the story because, you know, the host wants to guide the conversation into what areas are interesting to the host. Well, so I'm going to try to take some time here tonight and explain to you from my point of view what we really did here and how this really turned out so that you will have a fuller, richer understanding of just how surprising and astounding this whole thing really turned out to be. So you're going to get, you know, really the first thorough inside scoop on that listening to this show tonight. And if you haven't been there yet, go to Arecibo Project.com. Look at some of the video clips that are posted. You know, I was hoping that just anything out of the ordinary would occur. Little did I know what happened was significant enough for me to send out a press release about it. I don't think anybody saw that coming. But again, I'll explain all that soon. And a topic that everybody's just going to love. Monday is the official release day of my new anthology, It Was a Dark and Creepy Night, Real Life Encounters with the Strange, Mysterious, and Downright Terrifying. And this is a book that was really authored by 150 people who all sent in their own true first-person experiences. And we were able to present them in this book. And we were able to take these stories and make them presentable. Because, mind you, this book was not just we didn't just say, okay, if you're a writer, write up a nice story and send it to us. We said, it doesn't matter if you can't write, if you can hardly spell, if you can hardly string two sentences together. Send us your story, and we'll whip it into shape for you. And Andrea Sarkopol in Canada, she was the person who polished the vast majority of these stories into the proper shape to be presented. And so hour number two, she's going to join us for that hour, and we're going to talk about some of these actual creepy little tales, including some of the ones that really freaked me out, some of the ones that I'm sure have freaked her out, because that's the whole point here. And Shelley, you have a story on page 91 of It Was a Dark and Creepy Night, and I think it would be cool if we have you read your story on the air. We'll do it later this hour to whet everybody's appetite. Would you be willing to do that, to tell your story in your own words, Shelley?
Yeah, I'll do that. I will read it.
Good. Because, you know, Vance was recently in the studio, and he has a story in the book, but I read his story during the program. So you're going to be the first person to actually read your own story on the show.
Yay!
Yeah. Also, keep in mind, folks, just a little programming note I'll tell you right up front here. Next week, we are going to take the week off. I'm going to be out in the field working on a variety of projects. Again, I'm making the most of some of my final days here at the Bermuda Triangle base for a while. But now we're moving into the fall programming season, which means that the ball games are going to start back up. And so when that happens, that means our schedule gets a little bit rocky, because sometimes on the weekend we get preempted. There will be a ball game, and so that takes precedence, and there will be no Speaking of Strange. So in addition, you know, since I'm going to be in the process of coming back to Asheville, getting resettled in there, you're going to find our show maybe to be a little bit hit and miss after tonight. But that's just, you know, that's what happens every year. We've been doing this show at over 10 years, and, you know, that's just when the fall comes around, it's ball game season. But remember now, you can always go to speakingofstrange.com, and you can find a live chat during the program as well as podcasts there. They're free, they're easy to download, so that you can listen to shows going back for years. And so even if you're missing a show, if we're not on the air and you like to listen live, well, you know, go listen to a podcast. Let's see. Also at speakingofstrange.com now, don't forget there are links to all kinds of cool stuff. You'll find our Facebook page, which is always updated with weird stories, Twitter feed. You'll find a link to the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours and Ghost Hunts. And, boy, are we about to start booming with those as Halloween approaches. So go to hauntedasheville.com. And you'll find a link to Wright's Coin Shop, where you can learn more about Miss Shelley Wright and her family business there. They've been in business for over 40 years. And, yes, you can even find a photograph of Shelley there at the desk, pleasantly helping a customer. Customer/listener, perhaps. Who knows?
Definitely.
Perhaps.
Yeah. So before we take this break and come back with this amazing report, here's an interesting story from Corsicana, Texas. Headline, runaway teen lives undetected at Texas Walmart. A teenager lived there for 2 days at a 24-hour Walmart after running away from his aunt's home. A store employee there, about 50 miles south of Dallas, eventually discovered the 14-year-old boy when he was spotted stepping out from behind some boxes in the baby apparel aisle. They say that nobody even knew anybody was looking for a kid, and apparently he had assembled some boxes and other items to create kind of a little cave for himself there. It says they found a number of items to indicate he'd been there for a while, including, you know, food and beverages. So I guess if all else fails, there's always the chance that you can just go say, screw you, world, I'm going to go live at Walmart.
It is.
And,
it's big enough. I mean,
well, some of them are definitely big enough. So, okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the full story about the Arecibo Project and the amazing contact that I believe we achieved. You're going to be the first to hear it right here on this show. It's the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
Of interplanetary craft. occurrence of interplanetary most extraordinary collapse.
From the heart of the Bermuda Triangle, the Isle of Enchantment, Puerto Rico, hitchhiking the ET highway, I am your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, and you may call them at 828-298-5402. Oh, I've been looking forward to giving you guys this story that you're about to hear, and I'm just going to jump right into it. okay, now I've talked about this a good deal already on Speaking of Strange, but Friday, August the 15th, was the 37th anniversary of the so-called WOW signal. Now, the WOW signal was a 72-second signal that was detected by SETI from their Big Ear telescope with Ohio State University. And this message had all the earmarks they were looking for in a well-designed, intelligently formed transmission that may come from another, perhaps, civilization. It was so exciting that Jerry Amon, the guy who was on duty, the scientist, when he saw it, he just wrote the word, "Wow!" exclamation point in the margins, and that's where the name came from. Now, one thing that's really interesting about this signal is that the signal came in at approximately 4.2 gigahertz. That's, I think, billion hertz, okay? It's very, very high frequency. And that is significant because 4.2 gigahertz or thereabouts happens to be the frequency at which hydrogen naturally resonates. Now, hydrogen also just happens to be the most plentiful element distributed throughout the known universe. So that means if you're going to attempt to send a signal and you have to figure out what medium through which to send it, well, you know, space is primarily a vacuum and so on, but hydrogen would be the most likely element that might actually help pass this signal along. So that the very frequency number itself is perhaps important here. Nonetheless, for 37 years, various scientists have been going out there scanning, sending signals, trying to achieve some kind of contact using radio transmissions with basically no success. So I decided, well, here I am in Puerto Rico, and I'm not far from the Arecibo Observatory, which is the largest radio satellite dish on planet Earth, kind of like Earth's telephone to the cosmos. The very dish used in the movies Contact and James Bond's GoldenEye, a lot of other projects and films. And I figured, well, in the spirit of Contact, why don't we try to create kind of an independent project here where we do some of our own transmissions from around Arecibo and other spots on the island. And so basically I went to a big ham radio operators festival in Arecibo, and I met a lot of them, and essentially came up with a plan. The plan was that, well, the original plan was I would have radio operators transmit a message on August 15th of 2014, just a message into space saying, essentially, we want you to come and appear at a certain set of GPS coordinates. And at that set of GPS coordinates, we would have not only cameras, but also a live webcam streaming a big portion of the sky back so that people around the world could watch it and help analyze it in real time. So I figured the best person to To record this message is the man who speaks to millions of people every single weeknight about weird stuff, George Norrie, host of Coast to Coast AM. So George became our friendly ambassador to the cosmos. He recorded this message, which you can hear at ArecipoProject.com. It's a little over a minute long. And so I realized once I started talking to these radio operators that, you know, it's cool that this is all originating from Puerto Rico, but why not just expand this thing and put a call out there for anybody in the world who happens to have access to radio transmission technology. Work with us as well. Go to the website, find the signal, find the information, and transmit it. But let's go beyond that. Let's also ask people to just telepathically send their thoughts out as well. And because we always hear stories about these aliens being sensitive to telepathic signals and human thought. And to emphasize that, I got in touch with Dr. Mulder, who creates the wishing machines, which are mind-powered machines. And I said, can you create a special wishing machine, a special radionic box just for this project that is designed to specifically take all these intentions from all these people and amplify them to give us, you know, the highest possible or the highest possibility of a positive result? And he said, absolutely. And he sent me this special, you know, modified, customized box just for the experiment. So we were using all the tricks we had in the book to try to send this thing out. So here we go. The morning of August 15th, 2014 rolls around. We start transmissions early on. The very first transmissions came from around Boca Raton, where the Bermuda Triangle Research Base is. And then about 10 o'clock in the morning, transmissions started at Arecibo. And then we did transmissions at Lajas and various other places. Lajas is where you find the Laguna Cartagena, which is the UFO hotspot. And I was in charge of setting up the webcam. So I've never set up a webcam to record a section of the sky for 8 hours before. So I set up the webcam, and the webcam, the whole setup worked very well, actually, transmitting this message back. We did have one little snafu. The only snafu we had a computer sort of overheat for about 5 minutes, and we lost our signal for 5 minutes. But other than that, we had, you know, 7+ hours of good footage of the sky. And filmmaker C. Eric Scott, my cohort in crime on many film and TV projects, was sitting there in his studio in Washington, D.C., watching this footage in real time as it came in, recording it and trying to analyze it, because that night I was already scheduled to go on Coast to Coast AM and give a report. And, of course, on the East Coast, the show Coast to Coast AM doesn't start till 1 a.m. So I needed to, hopefully, if I was going to get any results, my plan was to have some of those results processed and put on the website, so when I talked about it on Coast to Coast AM that night, people could go there and look at it. So we were kind of under a time crunch, and there were a lot of things that could have gone wrong. But the weather was beautiful. We didn't have a drop of rain. Everything that we planned went right, which is just amazing in and of itself. So the webcam ran from noon till 8 p.m., and so, and of course, after dark, I'm out there with night vision, analyzing, you know, looking around at the night sky around the Laguna. I mean, we're using everything we have. So after 8 p.m., C. Eric Scott, he texts me and he goes, okay, I'm looking through all this footage, and I've seen some stuff that's kind of odd. He says, we've got some birds here. We've got some insects here. And he goes, but there are a couple things that caught my eye I want to go back and look more at. So then he contacts me a little bit later, and he says, okay, I've got something here that I can't explain. He goes, this is some really weird stuff. And I was like, awesome, hurry up, get it processed, send it to me. So he sends me these two video clips, and they're each short. In the first video clip, you see the sky, and then all of a sudden, this black sort of saucer-shaped object just appears and then disappears at light speed in frame. Now, mind you, we've got footage of bugs and birds and stuff, and this was not it. So that was pretty odd. But the second clip, what we call Anomaly 2, this was the one that was really, like, blowing our minds. Because in clip number 2, you not only see an object appear and then shoot straight up into the sky, but it is accompanied by this eerie, high-pitched tone. We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's a lot more to this story, and I'll explain the rest of the story. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, and it's called Speaking of Strange.
Stretch to the point of no turning back. Fly to fancy on a windswept field. Standing alone, my senses reel.
Headline, Arecibo Project researchers make contact with E.T. in Puerto Rico. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, the place where your money becomes more money, and you may call them at 828-298-5402. There's also a link at speakingofstrange.com. Now, before the break, I told you in the second video clip that Eric had discovered in our 7-plus hours of live stream that day, there is this object that appears at light speed on screen, and then it just shoots straight up into the sky. But perhaps the weirdest thing is that it's accompanied by this eerie, high-pitched tone. And I actually shared, of course, Mobius here in North Carolina. He was transmitting from North Carolina, and he was analyzing data as well. And Mobius, I talked to him before I went on Coast to Coast, and I said, watch this video. What do you think of it? And the first thing he said was, did you add that sound effect to that UFO? I said, no, I absolutely did not. That, you know, that's what was naturally there. But here's one thing that's very odd. There had been a point earlier in the day when I was sort of monitoring the setup here, and I had the webcam way outside, shielded from the computer that it was attached to, and another computer that was in another room monitoring the signal. Everything was shielded. I wanted to make sure there was no possibility of any feedback. Also, none of our transmissions were taking place near the webcam. And yet at one point, I heard this kind of odd, high-pitched noise coming through our monitor. And I was like, oh, man, I guess I screwed up. There must be some feedback coming in somewhere. So I ran over to the monitoring computer, and I turned the volume all the way down, and still we're getting this tone. And I was like, what the heck? And I walked outside to where the webcam was, and I couldn't hear anything with my naked ears, and yet this cam was picking up this tone. So it was very irritating to me because I thought, oh, this is screwing up our feed. But that was, you know, about as far as it went at the time. So now, here we are looking at this footage of this UFO with this tone accompanying it. So 1 o'clock comes around. I go on Coast to Coast AM. I'm talking about how excited that we are that we've just started analyzing the footage, but we have this one clip with this weird noise, this tone, and maybe who knows what it means. It reminds us of, you know, the Close Encounters. You know, maybe we can analyze this somehow and learn something or deduce something about what was happening, because it obviously was sort of inducing some kind of an electromagnetic field or signal into the microphone, right? So at one point, we take a break and we come back, and George Norrie says, well, everybody, I'm going to play an audio sample here of the WOW signal that was captured 37 years ago. And he plays this really high-pitched tone. And it was funny because I didn't even realize that there had been an audio version of the WOW signal. I always saw it as a printout in numbers. And all of a sudden I start getting emails from people who were saying, oh, man, tell George he must have messed up. He said he was playing the WOW signal, but he actually played the audio from your video. So I said to George, people are confused. They're telling me that when you said you were going to play the WOW signal, what you actually were playing, what you actually played was audio from my UFO video. And George goes, Josh, what I played was the WOW signal. And I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, Mobius is able to call Coast to Coast, break through, get on the air. And Mobius goes, guys, I am about to lay an egg here. Because everybody has just realized what's going on. This signal that we picked up, this audio that came in, is a version of the WOW signal. That apparently, when this UFO showed up, in my opinion, it was beaming some kind of signal like the WOW signal back to us. And talk about, you know, just, you know, ice water down the back. This was just, you know, I was reeling. I was speechless when I realized this. And I could hear sort of collectively millions of people gasp around the world listening to the show. And later, when we actually figured out what had happened and started doing more proper analysis, we ran spectrographs of the WOW signal audio and the audio from our video. And I want you to go there to ArecipoProject.com, and you can see a comparison of a slice of the waveform from the WOW signal right next to a slice, a cross-section from our audio. And I was so floored by this. Here's the press release that I put out. Arecibo Project researchers make contact with ET in Puerto Rico, An independent group of researchers in Puerto Rico believe they may have made contact with beings from elsewhere last Friday, August 15th, 2014, 37th anniversary of the mysterious WOW signal captured by SETI. The Arecibo Project, led by Joshua P. Warren, director of the Bermuda Triangle Research Base, spent the day transmitting radio messages into outer space from Arecibo, Lajas, and other parts of the island, asking ET to appear around certain GPS coordinates, etc., etc. A variety of anomalies were captured on camera, including a saucer-shaped object that appeared and then shot straight up into the sky, accompanied by a high-pitched tone. Warren's team compared the tone to the famed WOW signal and say it is so similar they think the UFO sent this signal to them as a sign of successful communication. Now, let me pause, guys, and remind you all, the original WOW signal was picked up with this big, broad, multi-million dollar telescope that the SETI project was using. This, what we got, was just picked up with a little webcam microphone, not a big broad dish like that. And so from Mobius's analysis, he says this is essentially a demodulated signal from the WOW transmission turned into audio. I know that sounds very technical, but essentially what it's saying is that all the information that was in the WOW signal was very broad. What we have here is apparently the same audio type signal without all that other extra information that the dish was able to pick up. So now here's where things get controversial. Even Mobius has said, Josh, are you sure you want to say this? Are you sure you want to write this? And I am not at all afraid of the criticism for giving my opinion on this, because I've been here in Puerto Rico for 7 years, hearing stories, talking to people, and what we experienced on the 15th is just kind of the capstone, the research-oriented capstone to a much more elaborate and extensive history. Quote, after my 7 years of research here, the accumulating evidence suggests we may be dealing with a new form of life in Puerto Rico. Sometimes huge and sometimes small drones. I believe these beings may be a highly advanced, extremely sleek and efficient organic slash electronic hybrid. They have probably evolved much longer than humans and are now capable of interstellar and interdimensional travel, seeming to pop in and out of our visible dimensions almost instantly. Hundreds of years of native lore, combined with our modern research, indicates they are sensitive to human thought, often engaging in contact when a highly focused human or group of humans telepathically projects a desire to interact with them. We don't know their ultimate agenda, but if it were destructive to humans, we'd likely have been harmed by now, end quote. So you can imagine a lot of people are saying, whoa, Warren has finally lost his marbles. But essentially, when you talk to people here over and over and over who say, look, this has been a part of the Taino culture. There are symbols that are used to meditate, symbols that are used to go out and to telepathically basically ask them to show up. And those people show you video that they keep getting of these weird objects that are appearing very quickly and popping in and out of visible reality. And then you compare that with all the lore of the Bermuda Triangle, all the other weird things that we've documented here. To me, it seems like that, okay, what I gave was just an opinion. And I'm inviting everybody to go to ArecibaProject.com, where we have all the raw data available, and look for themselves and document for themselves what they think this is and let us know. But I'm floored, and I think that there's a very good chance that what we achieved here was some real viable contact. We've got about a minute here before break. Sam, what do you think about that?
Well, did anybody else? You said there's people all over the world that had ham radio transmitters and whatnot. Did anybody else pick up on that, or was it just your device that you got that?
Oh, no. There were people who emailed me from around the world who were transmitting, and I know for a fact that Mobius was transmitting from North Carolina, and he was sending something like 500 watts up at about 4.2 gigahertz. So there were a lot of people doing that, but I think the mind-powered machinery might be even more significant, because that was the biggest difference between what other scientists have been doing over the years and what we did. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Shelley Wright read you her creepy little tale. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
You hardly ever saw Granddaddy down here. You only come a town about twice a year. La 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 la
maybe hit or miss.
Hey, I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange, and I've been getting wonderful emails from around the world from people excited about what happened to the Arecibo Project. Here's one from England. It says, Joshua, just want to send you a quick message to say how much I admire and thoroughly enjoy your work and dedication to the fields of paranormal research. You are without doubt one of the hardest working people in the field at the moment, and many of us are inspired by your enthusiasm and very intelligent innovation in the area. I heard you on Coast to Coast recently as a Coast Insider from the UK about the transmission into deep space after the WOW signal, and all of us in the household were fascinated by how all that went. He says, I really enjoyed that discussion, and like many people, I think if there's ever a time where we need ET to step in, it's right now. Keep up the excellent work, Joshua. We all appreciate it. Our deepest respect to you here from England. And that comes from Wilf. So isn't that nice? Isn't that great to get feedback like that? That's the response that we're getting from around the world to the Arecibo Project, and that kind of thing just makes your day. Okay, next hour, we're going to talk about the new anthology, Creepy Little Tales. And these are little tales in a book called It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. And on page 91, you will find one, a true story that I find quite eerie and haunting, by Miss Shelley Wright. Now, Shelley, you have your copy of It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. Please do us the honor of reading us your creepy little story.
All righty. The name of my story is Happy Birthday. A couple of years ago, I called my best friend Beth and sang Happy Birthday to her, as I did every year. We chatted a few minutes longer, making dinner plans for later that evening, but I got the feeling that something was bothering her. She just didn't sound right. We met and ate dinner, and she opened her presents. We were about to get up from the table when she blurted out, I have a confession to make. When you sang Happy Birthday to me this morning, you sounded just like my mother. Her beloved mother had been dead for months. I have a confession to make, too, I said. I talked to your mother last night, and I asked her to do or say something that would let you know she was around and loved you.
Now, I don't know about everybody else, but that's one of those stories that just like,
an
eerie moment. It's a beautiful moment, but there's something eerie about it, don't you think, Shelley?
Definitely, and especially since I didn't realize it as it was happening, and this isn't the first time that her mother has spoken through me, and I had no idea it was going on at the time. And I'm thinking that maybe something's going to happen later on this year with her mom, because Bethy is getting married in November. And I'm going to be at the wedding. And I cannot imagine that her mother won't be there and have something to say. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
So you see, everybody, that's what we're talking about when we say, you know, little stories, very short stories, but stories that get right to a point and span the whole spectrum from ghosts to UFOs to cryptids to interdimensional beings, synchronicity, angels, demons, sometimes things that are too odd, they're hard to even put into words. So we're going to dig into that, and we're going to share quite a few of these stories with you next hour on the program, because the book is officially released on Monday, even though you can buy copies right now through Amazon.com, and you might even be able to find some at your local bookstore. Before we go to our break, something else I want to share with all of you. I recently did my third Wishing Machine webinar, and it's posted right now. You can watch it if you go to wishingmachineproject.com and click the news section. But I told everybody I was going to reveal a special gift, and it's what I consider to be the ultimate good luck charm. And it's something that you can download. It's free. It's simple. It's easy to do. And it's really just an image. interestingly enough. It's not a tracking device. It's not a program. It's not an app. And I announced that you can go to freecharm.com to get this thing. Listen to an email that I received the next day. This is a lady who says, I want to thank you very much for this gift. It's come to me at a time I was losing faith. I lost two fathers in 1 year, and I believe the universe sent support from people that I thought just didn't give a darn, but I was wrong. I believe that soon things are going to change, and I'm going to get a job, and everything is going to look up. And when I woke up and saw this charm, this was just like being given $1 million. You made my morning. Thank you very much. So go to freecharm.com, FreeCharm. I explain there why I think it works, and I believe it will make you a better person and the whole world a better place. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more spooky little stories from It Was a Dark and Creepy Night.